welcome to the Elm Park Rolls podcast, supported by Blue Collar Street Food. Well, this time we are doing the season year review. Blimey, it feels like the whole calendar's all changed around, doesn't it, completely? But the 2020 review, I've been joined by Aidy Williams. Hi, Aidy, how you doing?
Yeah, very well, Paul. Yeah, very well indeed. Hope you had a good Christmas.
Not too bad yourself?
Yeah, points on the board. That's what we're after. So I think we've all had a good Christmas, Reading fans.
It's been a cracking one in that way, definitely. And I've also been joined by Alex Everton. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm not too bad, Paul. Looking forward to 2021 and obviously sticking 2020 in the rearview mirror. So,
yeah. It has it for off the field. We're going to try and stick to on the pitch and see all the action there. We're not going to talk too much about the dreaded COVID world and all that, because we've gone through all that many, many times. So let's roll right back until the 1st of January. Mark Bowen is in charge. We're seeing really mid-table at this point, but we are on the end of a four-match winning streak, which culminates in a 2-1 win at Fulham. So how are we feeling then in that period then, Aidy? Kind of bit positive? Maybe we're going to prove the doubters wrong, Mark Bowen?
I think we were positive. I think, you know, when Bowen got the job, I think the very first result was a win at the Medeski Stadium in the last minute, you know, so it gave everybody a lift. Something needed to happen. We've mentioned it many, many times. The club was in a little bit of decline. Bowen's come in and we're on a decent run. And to go to Craven Cottage any year, any season, any year, any division and get a result and get 3 points is a big win. And I guess when you do that in the new year, you start thinking, well, hang on a minute, maybe this year could be our year. But, you know, a lot's happened since, highs and a lot of lows, I'm afraid, as well.
Yeah, totally. There was even a low in that match with Lucas Joao picking up his hamstring injury, which at the time we weren't kind of like thinking it was going to be as bad as it was. But Alex, that was a devastating blow for Reading FC and kind of more importantly Mark Bowen, I feel.
Yeah, you have to imagine if Lucas Joao had been kept fit for the second half of the season as he has been for the first half of this season, that we'd have potentially had a much better shot at finishing closer to the playoffs. I know in the end we actually finished a fair way off the playoffs, but you've got to imagine that we would have probably had a bit more of a shot had he been fit. And for Bowen, you know, if we'd finished 10 points better off, maybe his job wouldn't have been quite as at risk in summer. It's difficult to know, really, because obviously with Bowen leaving in summer, it wasn't necessarily a case of him not doing his job and not performing to expectations, but perhaps just that the club wanted to go in a different direction.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a lot of people have put that down as their favourite moment of 2020, the win at Fulham, though. It's a kind of a really upbeat one, Alex, and you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic game to be at. The away end was totally bouncing, and we were there with Dave from the podcast as well, and he'd come over from the US for Christmas, and he'd been to all four games, and there was a lot of talk of him not going home and him staying in Reading until we lost, and yeah, of course, he disappeared home, and the next game was the home game against Forest, where we had those two very, very late goals, one against and one for, and kind of that was the end of that winning period. So, yeah, I'm blaming Dave for the rest of Reading's results for 2020 after him disappearing after New Year's Day. But yeah, I can see why it's definitely so many people's favourite moment. It was brilliant away end to be in and to kind of. There was so much positivity going on as well at the start of the year there around the club, and following that kind of, I guess, honeymoon period for Mark Bowen, it was easy to see why as well. Reading were definitely kind of like felt like they were turning a corner and trying to put a lot of kind of bad feeling and poor results behind them, which we'd seen over the previous kind of 2-3 years.
Yeah, we also see in that kind of like January as well, we lose to Millwall and Bristol City. That kind of killed any faint hope of getting into the playoffs, which is always a long shot, 80, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, consistency has been a problem for Reading. You know, on their day, if we talk about a fully fit side, 11, 16, 18, 19, whatever it is nowadays, you know, we can give anybody a game, but when you're as inconsistent as Reading have been over the last 4, 5, 6 seasons, I think we've been fighting relegation probably for 5 of the 6. Obviously, Yapstan's first season in charge was a different ball game. We got to the playoff final, but inconsistency, you know, you go and beat Fulham at Craven Cottage, and like you say, you get beat by Millwall and you draw against Forest. And, you know, if you've got any aspirations, you've got to have a good home form. You've got to have good home form. The home form wasn't great, I don't think, and that you've got to pick points up away from home. And, you know, I know I'm fast tracking to right now, but the home form is great at the moment. And we're certainly picking up points away from home, and that's what you need to do.
And you can see that in the fact that we've already picked up as many wins this season as we had last season at home. And we're only at Christmas. You know, we've still got half a season to go, and we've already matched 7 wins. So you can definitely see the improvement with that home form already.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the last season, the home form was just abysmal, absolutely abysmal. But we move into February, which is a really mixed month. We got a 3-0 win at Sheffield Wednesday. George Puskas is getting some goals, but a low point for me, definitely the low point of 2020, was the 3-0 home defeat by Wigan. So that was just a horrendous performance. But what's really interesting is Liam Moore had probably his worst game there in a red shirt. And at that point, I was thinking maybe in the summer he's going to move on, he needs to change. These things happen in players' careers. But actually, it's been a masterstroke by Panovic, hasn't it, Eddie, by keeping him as captain. He's just transformed him this season.
Yeah, I think there was a big talking point, you know, big discussion start this season. Would it be Morrison and McIntyre? Because McIntyre finished the season really well and Moore was left out the side. So we thought, well, maybe, you know, just purely financially with the wages that Liam Moore's earning, possibly he'd be off somewhere else. And good luck to him if that was the case. But Paulo are stuck by Moore. And Moore's form has been outstanding. I've got to put my hand up. You know, I think we all gave him a little bit of stick, and probably rightly so, towards the end of last season. I think Liam is an honest fellow. I think he'll take that on the chin. But, you know, the way he bounced back and started the season wearing the armband, it was a masterstroke, because I think many of us would have given the armband to someone else, possibly, and maybe even left Liam on the bench to start the season. Paulo didn't do that. He stuck with his captain. The form was incredible. The lads obviously went 7 unbeaten, 7 wins on the bounce, and the rest is history. So, you know, credit to the manager, but credit to the player, because although you're an experienced championship defender, you know, like Liam is, and he's played hundreds and hundreds of games now, you've still got to do it. There is still pressure on you to start that season, you know, in a different gear to the way you finished the previous one. We know that the turnaround was minimal, obviously, with COVID and everything else. So, you know, you've got to give him credit, and it takes some doing. So it's a fair play to the skipper.
Yeah, totally. It's transformed him, hasn't it? It's great to see. Now we've got those options we'll come on to later in centre-half. We're actually building a really good, kind of solid bunch of defenders there, which we haven't had for quite a long time. Then moving into March, we've got our last game, then the dreaded COVID strikes. But we've got Birmingham City and Pele scoring the last goal before lockdown. Alex, you were at the game. We could never have predicted what was going to happen then, could we, after that match?
Straight after, no. I mean, that was that Birmingham game was such a game of two halves as well. We were just dreadful in the first half. We conceded very early on, and Scott Hogan, I think, lobbed Raphael in maybe like the fifth, sixth minute, something like that. And Reading were just terrible for the first half. Second half was completely different, and Reading dominated Birmingham completely. Picked up 3 goals in the second half. Pele scored really late on to kind of wrap it up after a free ball from Gareth McCleary, if anybody remembers him.
Start on Gareth McCleary. I like Gareth McCleary.
Yeah, I'm not bashing him. It was a great pass. And me and you, Paul, were at the Medeiros Stadium a couple of days after at a fans forum or fans, I don't know what to call it, but it was really odd because obviously we were all expecting to be playing Stoke at home 3 days after that, and in fact there was another 3 months until the next time we even watched a Reading game. So nobody expected it to be quite such a long time in between those games. And you know, it's kind of obviously been going on for 9 months now, but football is at least back and watching it, and been to some games, and I'm sure we'll come on to that later in the show.
Can I just say, Paul, very quickly, what Alex just said there about Birmingham, how poor we were in the first half. It's strange, isn't it? Because, you know, when you start the next season, the following season, and you start well, the bar's raised. Now, we can't say, and it's so foreign to think how bad Reading have been playing sort of first part of this year and the previous seasons and stuff like that, even this season, and seasons and years are difficult to talk about, but even this season, when we've been beaten, we haven't really been awful. Do you know what I mean? And you're going to get beaten. Yeah. And you're going to have evenings and afternoons when you're not quite at the races. I've done it. We've all been there. We've all been at fault for goals and everything else. But there's a way and a manner of getting beat. And the way that we used to get beat and just basically throw the towel in, even this season when we have been beaten, and we've had a few defeats, don't get me wrong, we haven't been bad. We haven't thrown the towel in. And that's what I really like about this current group of players, the squad, the manager and the backroom staff.
Yeah, every game feels competitive this season under Paunovic, and even under Bowen, as you were saying, AD, there was a number of games last season where we just got, you know, we didn't turn up basically, and yeah, we won against Birmingham, but I mean, after Birmingham, when we came back in June and July, there was games where we just didn't turn up at all, and Reading were just bad. Like, it wasn't a case that the opposition were particularly good. We just got dominated by teams who are better than us, and we didn't really compete necessarily. Whereas now, I mean, yeah, we're still going to lose games, and you know, we've seen it over the last kind of maybe few weeks against Norwich and Brentford, and yeah, we are going to lose games to teams who are doing well and are decent sides. But if we're able to at least put in a performance that fans are going to look at and say, well, you know, they've competed, they've tried. It's not a case of just throwing the towel in and looking uncompetitive. That's what fans want to see. Nobody expects to go out and watch their team win every week if you're supporting Reading or, you know, any other team in second tier, really. It's not realistic. But as long as your team is kind of, I guess, putting in the effort and the levels of commitment that fans want to see, then that's kind of half of the battle for the squad, I think, in terms of getting all the fans on side. So it's great to see that we're, I guess, now in that mode, as we haven't really seen that for the last, well, I don't know, probably since Stan was managing.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. It's one of the most enjoyable things, isn't the fact that you know that a team's going to have to beat us rather than we're going to give it to them on a plate. And that is what you want from your team when you're a fan, is just saying, okay, they're going to give 100%. You know, that's what I love. And the fact that there's two Reading players and they're Reading fans in there now, just the icing on the cake for me. It really is.
What do you think it is that drives that, AD, in terms of, I guess, teams having that kind of competitive spirit?
Pride, Alex, I think. You know, you've got to have a bit of pride about you. And, you know, we were a walkover at times last season, or, you know, this year, if you like, beginning of the year and last season and years gone by, we've been a pushover. We have been the Southern softies, you know.
And then I guess where's the difference? Because we've only signed one player, so the squad isn't necessarily different. But so what's the change, do you reckon?
The change is fresh ideas, a new voice. You know, like all Reading fans, when Bowen took over, obviously there was a big hoo-ha about the Jose Gomez situation, but when it all settled down, we all wanted fans. We wanted Bowen to do well, but I've always said it, and please don't take this literally, as in, well, hang on a minute, he's talking about players leaving, it's a better dressing room now. I don't mean it as blunt as that and as black and white as that, but you have to have a sort out at some point. And Reading Football Club needed to offload. They needed to offload players. And I don't mean start again, because they've kept the nucleus. You know, the squad is there and they've got good players. And okay, Josh Lauren, they signed in the summer. It was actually Bowen signing. It's turned out to be a great signing. Ajaria signed permanently. That was a good move by Reading, I think, and really pleased the Reading fans. The owners, you know, putting their cash where their mouth is, if you like, putting their money where their mouth is. So, you know, just you need to surround yourself in the dressing room with good people. And like I say, I'm not by any means saying that the people left weren't good people. But at some point, you do need a clear out. You need to sort out and go, right, okay, that was then, and this is now. And it is now. You look at Holmes, you look at McIntyre, Estevez even. You know, I'm not his biggest fan at this moment in time, but he's coming on, he's learning the game, he's in a different country, he's never played in his country, he's never played in the championship, and he's 18. You know, Rinomota still learning his trade. Josh Lauren, he's not learning his trade because he's mid-20s, but, you know, these players are improving and they're getting better and better. Put them with the Raphaels and the Moore and the Zhaos and the Swifts and the people that have been around Mate for a while. then all of a sudden, that's a really good dressing room for me. So, again, I'm not saying that the people that left were bad people, but I think, and judging by the look of it, it was the right time, I think, for those players to leave the football club and to hit, you know, the next chapter of their careers as well, wherever that may be.
Yeah, we seem to have found the right jigsaw at the moment, basically. I think that's essentially what we've got. It all works really well together. We kind of like come back after the break from the lockdown period, the first time we come back, 1-1 against Stoke, and then Joao gets injured again. This is the problem with Lucas Joao. He's a fantastic footballer. And this is why, AD, when we recorded the kind of end of season review, which you months ago, it must have been, saying that Lucas Joao wouldn't get 20 goals a season. This is the reason why we say that, because he picks them up, doesn't he?
It's brilliant, social media. I love it, because it is what it is. And as soon as you say something like I did, he's not going to get 20 goals.
Yeah, I did the same. I agree. So I'm out there with you.
But the thing is, keep him fit, Joao. That's what you've got to do. You've got to keep him fit. You've got to wrap him up in cotton wool, because he still hasn't got those 20 goals yet. You know, so I don't want to see him come back in the side and then do his hamstring again, and he's out for another 4, 5, 6 weeks. And then all of a sudden, there's a little bit of pressure on him, or maybe the football club would then go and sign somebody, and then all of a sudden, you're not the number one striker. Things can happen overnight in football. We have to get him fit, and when he's fit, he's as good as anybody. I say that Raphael is the best goalkeeper in the Championship. That's my opinion. Forget all this nonsense on Twitter. Raphael will not be dropped all season. Don't even think about it. Don't even think that Southwood or Walker will be in goal if Raphael is fit, even if he does make a couple of mistakes. Last night proved he is the best. He is top. Joao is top class when he's fit. It doesn't just give us goals, Paul, Alex. He gives the team the identity. When he's in the team, everybody knows their job, and we've got a style of play. We know what's going to happen. When he's not in the team, and unfortunately, Mate has mirrored that when he's not been in the team. Unfortunately, he's been out as well. And Sam Bulldog, you know, great guy, great pro, makes runs, plays on the shoulder of the defenders, looking to get in behind, but he doesn't give you the same as what Lucas Joao does. Even set plays, for and against. Joao's the big guy, very dominant in the air, powerful. So, you know, let's be brutally honest. We're not a one-trick pony at all. But if Joao was to play 18 of the next 23/24 games, I'd take that right now. Take that right now. I think I'd take 16, actually.
No, I think, and if he plays in those games, I'm certain we get in the playoffs. I'm that confident he makes such a difference that we would get there. I mean, obviously, there can be key injuries and all that, but I'm just going to say that I think we would, because he will get, if he's going to play 16 games, I'm confident that he would get at least 8 goals. He's that kind of striker and in that kind of form. And he would also link up with a few as well. But Alex, we then move on to another one with the goal machine. It's just been mentioned by AD there, Yaku Mate. We play Luton Town away, and then all of a sudden he decides to have an absolute goal fest. 4 goals that just come out of nowhere, a 5-0 win. Nobody saw that coming, did they?
No, especially because we hadn't won since coming back from the first kind of break in football. And I think at that point Luton had just brought Nathan Jones back, if I'm mistaken, and they were doing okay the first couple of games after lockdown. And Mate got himself a hat trick, and all of his goals were really, really well taken in that game as well. And he got 3 just before half time. And I think that might be Mate's only hat trick for us.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, certain. First professional one, I think it was then.
But yeah, he was fantastic that day. Everything he touched went in. Even Puskás scored, Paul. So, you know, it must have been a good result that day. It was a really top performance from Reading to defeat a team which were, yeah, Luton were in the bottom six, but I think they were still in the relegation zone at that point, actually, but they were in that kind of relegation battle, and we basically tore them to shreds that day. And to be honest, Luton always seemed to struggle against Reading every time, as we saw on Boxing Day. We never seemed to have a competitive match with Luton. We seemed to just kind of tuck them away nicely every single time we play them. So perhaps we shouldn't have been so surprised that Mate managed to bag 4 goals that day. Of course, the disappointing thing is that we didn't then kind of, I guess, carry that on into our last 5, because at that point there was a very, very remote chance that we could still kind of clinch that sixth spot, I think. But yeah, the last five games were a lot less, I guess, a lot less enthralling and a lot less successful.
Yeah, totally. We
can
had
I just pick
game.
Up very quickly, Paul, sorry, just very quickly on Yaku Mate. If I said to you, Ricky Newman, if I said to you, Barry Hunter, John Mackey, John Slarko, I'm trying to think of players that are never
Andy
really
Hughes.
On the top of the...
Andy Hughes.
Say again, Alex.
Andy Hughes, another one.
Andy Hughes. Noel Hunt, although I wasn't in the dressing room with Noel Hunt. My point is, in the dressing room, these players, as a squad member, are vital. Those lads I mentioned when I was playing, like I say, they wouldn't roll off the tongue. They wouldn't be what people class as Reading legends. But in the dressing room, away from the limelight, they are unbelievable to have among day in, day out, the fun, the banter, the stick, whatever it is. And Mate is that person, I think, at Reading Football Club at the moment. He's always involved, you know, on any video that goes out on Instagram or social media, whatever it is. There's always Mate, you know, behind it, pulling the strings, having the crack, having the laugh, you know, the brute, he comes on, everyone loves him and all that. So Alex is absolutely right, you know, talking about him as a player. But don't be fooled what goes on behind the scenes in the training ground, in the dressing room, day in, day out. The Ricky Newmans, the John Mackeys, the Barry Hunters of this world. Like I say, they're not
James
named.
Harper.
Harps, you know, there's hundreds of them. But Harps got the credit on the pitch as well. You know, the 106 team, brilliant midfielder with City. I was thinking more players that don't get the credit on the pitch, but... You know, as players in the dressing room, day in, day out, we don't just talk about a match day once a week. You've got to train with these boys day in, day out. So Mate, I think, is, you know, nucleus for that. When it comes to bonding, having the crack, having the banter on social media, I think, you know, he pretty much pulls the strings. And that's important. I just wanted to make that point.
No, I think you're totally right. Because I remember when we did the season review with you, AD, none of us picked Yaku Mate as the player of the season, despite the fact that he scored 17 goals. He's almost taken for granted what he's doing, and he's just progressing as a player. I think during the periods when he's been fit this season, he's just looked like he's stepped up again. Just unfortunate he got that injury against Sheffield Wednesday. Is it all Birmingham?
I think one of the things with Mate, especially this season, is I think we've seen the fact that he's now got himself into a position which he's claimed as his own. It's not necessarily helped him that much, I think, as a player, but in terms of, I guess, fan appreciation for him, all of a sudden now when he's not in the team, you can tell that Mate's not in the team because we play differently. Yeah. And we don't play the same way without Mate in the team all of a sudden. The relationship he's struck up with Zhao up front is ridiculous. It's like, you know, it's like they were made to play up front together, together. You know, having both of them back in the team is going to be huge. We obviously touched on how critical it is to keep Zhao fit, but I think it's almost maybe not as important, but it's very close to having being at the same level as to having Mate fit as well, and making sure that he's on the field, because we play such a different style of football now, especially this season when he's actually fit and available. Compared to if he's, you know, sat in the stands.
Yeah, I agree on that one. Unfortunately, the game I'm talking about now is a Swansea match at home when he actually managed to get sent off. So that's a bit of a downer there for Yaku. But these things happen, don't they? That 4-1 was a really strange game, if I remember it correctly. We had multiple chances to go ahead in the game, maybe when it was 1-0. Loads of one-on-one. Swansea just went kamikaze because they were desperate to get into the playoffs, and it worked out for them. I don't know what to think of that end of that season. I thought it was quite depressing, AD. I've got to be quite frank. On that evening with the 4-1, I was not feeling upbeat at all.
Yeah, the Swansea game. I mean, the season was coming to an end, and like you say, Swansea threw the kitchen sink. And you know what? As a player, I think you just want to get off the pitch. You know, the season's dead and buried. You're going nowhere. What did we finish 14th? Was it? Did we finish 14th last season?
Yeah.
You know. You just want to get off. You've been hammered at home against Swansea. Get off, dust yourself down, have a bit of a break, go away with the family, get a bit of sun on your back, and then come back and give it a go. And the less said about it, the better. And I'm not sort of just dusting it under the carpet at all, because it was a hefty defeat and it was a little bit embarrassing. But, You know, I played in games towards the end of the season. You've got nothing to play for. I'm not saying the lads looked after themselves at all, but the best team won. A little bit embarrassing. Off you go. Get ready for next season.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And during that summer period, we saw some real massive movement within the club. We saw Veljko Panovic come into the team as manager on the 29th of August, but bizarrely, Mark Bowen was still there. This was a really strange situation, Aidy. Have you ever seen anything like that when the first team manager hasn't actually been sacked and a new one's brought in?
Well, we had it with Gomez, didn't we? You know, a bizarre situation, director of football, and, you know, people were saying, did he appoint himself? And I'm glad we got to the bottom of that one, because there was no animosity between Gomez and Bowen, and everyone lived happily ever after. So, you know, it's not really the way it should be done. You know, there is a way of doing things in football, but football is unlike any other business. It really is. And, you know, it's a law unto itself. And sometimes, you know, managers find out that they've been sacked via a text message or social media or a journalist or whatever it is. So, you know, listen, Mark did his job for Reading. Let's not, you know, slaughter Mark Bowen. He come in, he turned it around. There was a little bit of positivity at one point. And, you know, we weren't fighting relegation, which was nice. You know, we definitely wasn't getting overly competitive in the top six either, but we weren't fighting relegation. I don't think any one of us really thought that we were going to get relegated. The new guy comes in and it's another Wikipedia job, isn't it? You know, you've got to search him on Google. We don't know anything about him. He's 43 years of age. His CV predominantly really was working with the youngsters with Serbia, obviously won the World Cup finals, the Youth World Cup finals with Serbia. So he obviously brings youngsters through and, you know, that was it. He's never managed in his country before, 43 years of age. It was shambolic, the pre-season. Let's be brutally honest. It was utterly shambles because, you know, had things had changed with the government guidelines, the lads, they could have even been stuck in Portugal for a couple of weeks. The season would have started with a reserve team or an under-23 fixture, but ultimately it worked out for the best. So it just proves really sometimes the best made plans, all the planning under the sun and get everything 100% spot on, you can still lose the next five games. So, you know, it was a shambles of a pre-season and we won seven on the bounce.
Masterstroke. We all knew that really, didn't we, deep down? I mean, yeah, that's a massive lie. Completely and utterly. I put out on social media about the low point. I put a list out, but one of the media you replied to saying that was the contract situation during the summer and maybe the club didn't deal with it in the correct manner. Do you want to explain that a bit more?
It wasn't so much the club. It was a bit of everybody, the club, the players, the agent, the environment. It was just messy. And these players were good players for Reading. And I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that they should have stayed at Reading, because I think Chris Gunter, I think Gareth McCleary, the best thing for them was to leave Reading. They did their time and they were outstanding at Reading. And you throw in Jordan Obita. And of course, you know, don't forget the other boys behind the scenes as well. There's been Milers, there's been Lafondres, there's been, you know, McNulty rather than Alfie. But a lot of these players, I think when the season come to an end, I'm not sure that the football club wanted them, but they tried to get them on the cheap. And I understand that. I don't, you know, don't get me wrong, I understand that. And as a footballer, you can say, well, so-and-so you, or put two fingers up at them and walk away. That's your right. But it just got messy. And it looked like that the offers were derogatory and, you know, agents were getting involved. And then it just wasn't a nice feeling, I don't think, the way that these people should have left the football club. I'm not saying as heroes, probably legends. You know, when you talk about Obita and Gunter and McCleary, those sort of players, they've been there a very long time and consistently proved themselves and performed at a high level. But I didn't like it. It got messy. It was stupid. It was a little bit derogatory at the end of the day. If you don't want me, if you're not going to offer me a decent contract, I'm on my bike. Full stop. I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I think that's beautifully summed up.
I think a lot of it came down to poor planning as well, right? And you mentioned it, Aidy, about the fact that the pre-season was pretty shambolic. And it felt, especially during kind of August, that there was no long-term plan, no vision, which I guess is probably a lot of... We saw a lot of replies today
Paul on Twitter around the low moment being the kind of handling of Bowen leaving, and but it wasn't just the handling of Bowen leaving. It was the whole summer was just, it was just very badly managed from top to bottom. It just felt like there was no real like vision as to what the idea, like what was the plan with the club? Were we going to keep players? What do we want to do with players like McNulty who are still in contract? And it's clear the club don't really want them. What are you going to do with players who are out on a, like out of contract in the summer, like Obita or Osho? Like, and we offer them deals, and it comes out that the deals are just, you know, pointless, and deals that they're never going to sign. And you, especially during summer, you kind of had to think that there was a real kind of issue with the club in terms of it felt a bit like a money issue once again at the club. And the fact that they were kind of, I guess, not really willing to put any money behind players that they actually wanted. But it, at the same time, it also felt like it didn't really know what the club wanted or what the upper management within the club actually wanted to do with both players and staff, which just caused for, it just caused for a lot of, I guess, concern amongst Reading fans during the
pre-season. Can I just say, I understand the politics, and we should understand the politics of football, because trust me, there's a lot of politics in football, particularly modern day football, you know. So, you know, if a player wants to go to a tribunal or a free transfer, this, that, the other, you know, if the club offers them something, then, well, the club can then say, well, hang on a minute, we have offered him a contract. So there's a lot of that that goes on, you know. So maybe they were just offering contracts, you know, regardless of the money that the lads were never going to accept. And I get that. There's a lot of politics behind the scenes, but ultimately, really, at the end of the day, I don't think the club were that bothered whether these players were signing or not signing. Maybe they wanted their cake and eat it, you know, and wanted the cherry on top as well. Well, do you know what? You could sit in the dressing room for 46 games. I might play you 6, 7, 8, 9 times. You're only on a few grand a week, which isn't going to break the bank. So, we're happy. Well, let me tell you, the player wouldn't be happy with that. So I'm glad it's all sorted out, and I'm glad the majority of the boys, if not all the boys, now have got themselves a club. So good luck to them.
Yeah, totally. It's great to see them playing again, especially someone like Jordan Obita being out for so long with a massive injury. He needs to be playing, doesn't he? And unfortunately, he signed for a team that wears yellow just down the road. But apart from that, it's all good. It's all good. So we all go into the start of the season wondering how we're going to do against Derby County in the first league match. We've not really known much about Panovic. We're kind of thinking, is this going to work out well, Alex? How's it going to pan out? We've put on an absolutely brilliant display. Let's forget how poor Derby were. We still dealt with them completely, didn't we?
It was honestly, it was one of our best performances in probably years. And I don't even think that's an understatement. Particularly, we completely dominated Derby from start to finish. We didn't allow them. I think we allowed them something stupid like one shot from distance, and that was it. Or one shot on target from distance, and that was it. Everything else was like miles outside the box and wide and over. And but the defence was just completely imperious that day. It just looked so organised compared to the back end of last season. And obviously, we just discussed the Swansea game where, you know, it kind of just was got a bit embarrassing. And this Derby game was just completely, you know, a complete mirror image of that. And going forwards, we just looked ridiculously quick on the counter-attack as well. And I guess that was a sign of things to come for the first kind of, you know, 5 to 10 games of the season. That counter-attacking football that we've been seeing, it first kind of reared its head, I guess, against Derby. And the start of the Lucas Schell run of form as well came from that Derby game. And that was probably one of the most unexpected starts to the season, I would say. I definitely wouldn't have expected us to go to a team such as Derby, who did finish above us last season as well, obviously, and just basically tear them apart and not even give them a shot, really.
We then proceeded to make a ridiculous start. Our best start to a season since 1985, which I can remember going to see that, my first ever season. That was great. I could do a whole podcast about that season, to be honest. But it's a kind of, I can't believe how good we were. And I was thinking, are we going to be able to sustain this? And how are you feeling about it?
Well, I think the Derby game gives you a lift. You go to Pride Park, albeit behind closed doors. There'd normally be first game of the season, 32,000 there probably or something at Pride Park. So Don't forget how good Raphael was that day, by the way. It was 0-0 and he made 2-3 really, really top-class saves. And that's what you've got to do. You know, if you're a goalkeeper, you're in the side to make saves. That's your job. That's what you get paid for. So it gave everybody a lift. It was a clean sheet. And, yeah, I mean, confidence breeds confidence, doesn't it? You know, and at the end of the day, a lot of people in that little 5-6-7 game run, people saying, well, we've only played Derby and they're a poor side. And who do we play? Barnsley, was it, as well? And, Wickham, did we play? We played Wickham early on.
Blackburn and Cardiff.
Blackburn and Cardiff are mid-table sides. And I think Blackburn at the time were the league's top goal scorers. So, they were banging goals. They scored against Reading twice, but we just happened to get four, I think it was, at Ewood Park. So it was just, you know, a snowball effect. And when you're in a dressing room and you're winning games and you're keeping clean sheets, it's an unbelievable feeling. You just can't put your finger what it is. You don't know why it's so different, because the majority of the team was exactly the same as when Bowen was selecting the team. It's just something that happens. It just clicks. And when it does, it is like chemistry, like, you know, if anyone had the formula, anyone knew what it was, we'd be billionaires, let alone millionaires. But it was just nice to see it. And for me, because of what was going on in the world with COVID, and it was just nice that Reading fans could enjoy it. I know they couldn't actually go and they couldn't be there at the Madejski Stadium or the away games. But you know what? We were listening to the radio. We were watching the telly. I follow whatever it may be, Sky. You know, I think we've been on Sky more times this season than we've ever done in the last 10 years. It's been incredible. So Reading fans were enjoying their football. And, you know, how often have we said that in the last 6-7 years? Not that often.
No, it almost became kind of like, instead of Leeds Sky, it became Reading FC Sky. It's gone absolutely crazy, hasn't it, Alex? It's just so enjoyable seeing us get all these wins and looking like, which we've mentioned repeatedly, just looking like a team. It sounds like a basic thing, but we look like we work for each other. We have a plan. And one of the great things is that Panovic can't find a system that's as good when Giles are the team, but he's managing to pick up points against teams that we should be. And you think that's a key thing for a team that's going to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, you've got to keep picking up the points when you don't have your first 11, I guess. And I mean, just looking at the results we've played against, if you look at the bottom six of the table at the minute, we've played 6 games against them and we've won 5. The only team we didn't beat was Sheffield Wednesday, and even that game, I think we all would probably agree that that game should have been a Reading win. So, you know, we're picking up points against teams that we feel like we should be beating. Even now, we beat Luton, we beat QPR, we beat Forest. All these teams are back at the bottom of the league, and we're still beating them despite the fact that we're not necessarily sitting with our strongest 11 out on the field. So, yeah, Panovic is finding a way to win. And I guess, yeah, we might not be picking up results against teams like the Brentford and the Norwiches at the moment. But we're remaining competitive. And I think there's a definite feeling, at least amongst the fans, that once you've got kind of your starting 11 back and your best 11 on the field, that we can be a match for any of these teams in this division. And that none of the teams who are above us in the table at the minute or around us even are like head and shoulders above us, and even with our best 11 that we wouldn't be able to put a performance in against them and potentially beat them.
Yes, it's wonderful viewing at the moment. I'll kind of like get to the end of this one and just wrap it up with a high. Let's get and finish this on a high. Best moment of 2020 for you, AD?
Oh, I don't know, because I like to do a random one. You know, I like to do...
I'm up to that. That's fine.
but I think collectively, you know, 2020 has been a bad year for most people. You know, I don't want to go into businesses and COVID and the hospitality industry and whatever it may be. You know, obviously sporting events have been called off left, right and centre, and the Olympic Games and this, that and the other. But you know what? Sometimes when I started on the radio, someone said to me, the majority of people only remember the beginning and they only remember the end. They don't often remember what goes in between. And it's a good advice, because I'm just going to remember the end of 2020 and I'm happy. We're going into 2021, 6th in the league table. And for the majority of the last 5-6 games or so, we've had a makeshift team out. And I think we've got a team a squad collectively with the manager and the backroom staff that we can be proud of at the moment. I think they dig in. I think they're tough to beat. We're not going to win every game. We got beat against a good Norwich side. We got beat against a Brentford side. A decent, you know, there's some decent sides there. Don't get me wrong. Bournemouth are a good side. But I think right now, going into 2021, six in the league table, considering we've had the worst injury list in the Championship, and I think we've got something to look forward to. I think everyone's a little bit optimistic. I think we're all half full at the moment. We've all raised our bar, and we keep raising it. And when we get the first teamers back, I don't think there's going to be any stopping us. I just hope that we can maintain what we're doing, winning games at home, picking points up away from home. Huddersfield's going to be tough. It always is. But I think right now, I think we've got a lot to look forward to, and we've got a team, a football club, that we can say we're actually proud of at this moment in time.
Yeah, that's it. That is my proudest moment as well. I'm actually proud to be a Reading fan now. And I haven't had that for a long time. That is my best moment. I actually look forward to watching us play. And we really need that at the moment, as we all know what's going on with COVID. It's just be able to watch them and think, yeah, okay, they're going to give everything. They might not win every game, but I'm going to enjoy it. And I know if we lose this match, we're going to come back in the next one. And that is a really lovely feeling. And we need some kind of release at the moment. So what would you say, Alex, is your most enjoyable moment, or however you want to frame it up?
So I think my best moment of 2020, Paul, is probably going to be a relatively popular one. Going back to stadiums for the first time after, what would it have been, 9 months or so, it's got to be up there for best moment of 2020, probably for most football fans, I would imagine, not just Reading fans. The Forest game was really good to be at, and it was lovely to go back and see us win and be able to experience, I guess, this team who are performing so well on the field and being able to watch them kind of in person. And I remember talking to you about it after the game and being able to notice that certain players do things you just don't really see necessarily when you're watching it on the TV, and the movement and the, I guess, the communication from the team is one which you pick up and you don't necessarily, you might not notice it when you're watching it just live on iFollow or on Sky. And that was really good to be at, and to be able to get back to a few games while that was still an option, I guess. And I guess hopefully that will be a contender for next year as well, being able to be back at games for 2021 and being able to watch live games once again. So that's probably my number one moment. I guess if I was to pick one from on the field, I'd probably go back to New Year's Day, in all honesty, back from the start of the podcast, and go with either Fulham away or Birmingham away. And both of those were just excellent days out and really good results, and just really fun away games to be at. So I'd go with one of those three, I think. If I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Forest at home, though, earlier in December.
Okay, then thanks a lot then, AD and Alex. Cheers for joining us on the 2020 review.
I've got to say, just very quickly, as we go into the new year, you know, yourself, you obviously are out on social media and you do your podcast. Keep doing them, mate. Keep doing them, because they're great. And, you know, Reading fans love it. They can get the interaction going. We've all got an opinion, and there's no right or wrong. You know, let's keep it clean. Let's keep it nice and keep it civil and keep it amicable. We don't have to destroy each other on social media. We're all in it for the same thing, in all fairness. So, you know, Alex, Paul, yourself, all Reading fans, I love it when I get the interaction. I try and answer as many as I can. Let's keep doing it. And, you know, let's, like I say, be proud of our football club and keep doing what you're doing, mate.
Oh, cheers, Andy. Really appreciate that. And I agree. Let's try and keep it civil. You know, we're doing really well. So let's keep it positive. So thanks a lot. Cheers. Thanks for listening.